consideration and any preparation needed related to the novel coronavirus testing and our role as the Board of Health. So basically it's a meeting so we can have a forum to discuss our concerns and also if we can be updated with the experts that we have here. I'd like to first of all thank the person who thought of having this meeting is Supervisor Heddens, and she actually thought about it last week. We're discussing it starting on Thursday and talk about prophetic because everything has kind of really blown up over the weekend. And so it was good that we were able to get this together. Okay, first of all, are there any questions at all? Right now?
No.
Okay, there'll be no real, there's not a real true agenda. Okay, so I'd like to start off, if it's okay, I'd like to hear from Les, if you want to talk about us. And could you get the microphone, please? And I also want people to realize that this is being recorded, and that will be part of the minutes. And so try to speak clearly, and please introduce yourself.
I do think we do have kind of an agenda, though. So
we do.
I'm assuming we still need to approve an agenda.
We do. Okay. Since we have, so then I will stand for a motion to approve our agenda.
So moved. Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor of approval of the agenda, say aye.
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 Thank you. Okay. Well, and I'll ask the public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard tonight before the Board of Health. Does anyone wish to speak about anything else besides the coronavirus? Okay, so decorum has been followed. Okay, and as soon as we get the microphone going, we'll first hear from Les.
Do we need to note in the minutes that she's on the phone?
Yeah, we probably should. Okay. For the minutes, everyone who's present is Supervisor Lisa Heddens, Mark Speck, John Passion, Molly Lee, Dr. John Kluge, and on the phone is Louisa. Thank you.
Is that tongue twister?
And I thought my last name was hard. Okay.
So now, let's see.
I'm Les White. I'm the director of Mary Greeley Home Health Hospice in Story County Public Health. I have with me Sherry Zook, as well as Teresa Ferrari, both public health nurses for Story County. We are actually going to share this. We've decided that we are quite the team and that we really need to divide and conquer. So this is the first that you'll see of that as we move forward through the COVID-19. I do have to give credit to Keith. He was the one that developed the PowerPoint. We actually had a meeting this morning, and let's see here. We had at our meeting, we had Story County Medical Center. We had Story County Public Health. We had Mary Greeley Medical Center. as well as an ISU representative. We also had a representative from our 1B coalition, which is our emergency management coalition. So all of those folks, with Keith leading us, we went through and began our planning in relationship to COVID-19 in Story County. So just to give
Louisa,
you
a... Louisa, you hearing this okay? Okay.
Should we maybe move it closer?
We're going to see if we can increase the volume for you.
Is that better?
Okay.
Is that better? Okay. We'll keep the microphone closer. This has 22. Actually, we found out late this afternoon that we do have one more case of COVID-19 in Iowa, so that is up to 23. That case was identified in Dallas County. I do not know, though, if it is community or community transmission or if it's really related to travel at this time. And I don't know, Heather, if you know which way it was. Okay. So I know it was later when they brought that out. This is information in the state of Iowa. We have three cases that have been labeled community transmission. That is the point where things then kind of begin to kick into play, because none of the three cases then are not related to any travel like all of the previous cases have been.
Where are those cases that are community transmission?
Yep.
Where are they?
They are in, one's in Dallas County, one's in Polk County, and one is up north.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. So that's where those are. There was also the first reported case of a 0 to 18-year-old patient in Iowa that was related, though, to international travel.
Okay.
Currently, there are no cases in Story County. We did today, ISU and all public schools are out except Collins Maxwell, and they did hold classes today. I have not heard any further about what their plans are in relationship to classes the rest of the week.
Late today they closed.
Okay. In relationship to IDPH has elevated the overall situation to substantial risk. That really has to do with following the CDC mitigation guidelines. As of yesterday, we were really early yesterday morning. I listened to a webinar. We were in the mild to moderate column in relationship to that mitigation plan. Because of the three cases that are community transmission, that moves us into a substantial risk category. What we heard today, or what we've been hearing a little bit of, we talked a lot about equipment and supplies. Really, the testing media is what seems to be in short supply at this point in time. So just to talk about what's really been going on in relationship to Story County Public Health, we really take our direction from the Iowa Department of Public Health. So they would notify and have notified us if there are folks in the county that need to be quarantined. We then do that follow-up in relationship to that and make the contacts with those individuals. Story County EMA is at a level 2 response. So that is Keith's responsibility and the assets mobilized within normal utilization rate. Mary Greeley, as well as Story County Medical Center, have both activated their hospital incident command centers, and they are holding regular meetings. I can speak for Mary Greeley Medical Center. We are meeting every day in the morning. We huddle and discuss what's going on in the community, and then we also have additional meetings weekly related to our incident command. ISU, their incident command center is also activated. As everyone knows, I think those classes are now going to be distance learning related until the students return. And all their facilities are still open. We did learn today, though, there are 3,800 students that remain in the dorms or in ISU housing. And that's really, they have 36,000 students overall. There is a direction that all the students studying abroad, they have returned. That first group of ISU abroad students are really completing their first round of self-isolation. I believe, and we have been in contact with ISU, we've met with them a couple times in relationship to how they're handling this, and they have really done a nice job in keeping an area for those students. They provided housing, they provided food to them, and just they gave them emotional support. They had a lot of resources available to those students. Now they have 256 students that will be from their second group that returns and are in self-isolation. Some remain in Ames, and some do go to their hometowns where they with their parents, I would assume, or where they originally came from. This, we divided up in relationship to objectives. This one has to do with conducting the risk assessment activities that are going on. As far as communication, to provide guidance to our stakeholders and our public, we have developed, we've been, as far as Story County Public Health, we have been in contact. As we get information, we pass that along. We have a long-term care group that we pass that along. We've been in communication with schools. Keith actually has contacts with the businesses and those types of folks in Story County, so we'll share information with him, and he distributes all of that way. We're at the point where we're just making sure that those critical infrastructures have adequate resources. We did go through today and identify what those top ones were with healthcare, hospitals, clinics, EMS response. Those are the ones that are at the top of our list. And then again, we want to make sure that there's adequate PPE available for any of those critical operations. Whoops, I think I skipped one.
So we want to make sure that Story County Public Health would be prepared to respond to a positive COVID-19 case and perform follow-up investigation of contacts. We want to ensure contact and quarantine processes are implemented and conduct trace-back calling for COVID-positive individuals or those that were contacted. So basically, if there is a positive, the lab, whether it's a reference lab or the university hygienic lab, reports it to Iowa Department of Public Health and the provider that implemented the test. And then that comes to us, and then we call the provider, make sure that it's a positive, that the diagnosis is real, and then we would begin, like we do with any other disease investigation that we've been doing, such as measles, mumps, TB, we would do a disease investigation.
It mentioned in the things that I read that they asked us to report to you and or the Iowa Department of Public Health even before we tell the patient, correct? That's what it says that they tell us to do. IDPH wants them to know before we even call the patient. So assuming that the patient, I get a positive, do you tell them they're positive or do we tell them they're positive?
I believe you would tell them they're positive, but first you would contact the IDPH just like any other, like pertussis, whooping cough, if you had a measles or a mumps case. It's a reportable disease,
right,
just as those others. So, yes, you would contact IDPH
first.
Yes.
And they would probably give us direction whether to call them and talk to them and what to say.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so then we would, if there were contacts, we would follow up, and we would do, it's HIPAA, it's no names mentioned, just do contact investigation. You were in contact with someone who's positive with this, watch for these symptoms. We would help them with self-isolation, monitoring temps. This is all guided by IDPH and then down to us.
So. What if it's an ISU student?
It's the same.
But do we report to ISU?
Do who? Well, it would be the same. The provider at TLIN does the test. It comes back positive. They contact IDPH. Also, IDPH might find out before the provider finds out, because if it goes through the UHL lab, then we connect. It's treated the same as if it was a citizen, an employee. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Just like any other disease investigation that we've been doing all along with active TB.
I was just going to say, I do want to ask at this point, we report out every 2 months to the Board of Health in relationship to what we've been up to as far as disease investigations, how many positive TB, whatever those cases are. This, I want to clarify, if you want this handled differently, if once we determine there is a positive case in Story County, would you like us to notify the Board of Health in relationship to that?
Yeah, I think it should be just like you relate other diseases to us.
Okay.
And I personally don't think you need to actually contact each of us when you have the first case, because we'll hear about it.
Yeah, I'll hear about it.
Okay. I mean, really, it will come through the pipeline.
So would you like us to contact you since you're our director?
I'd be fine with that. And then we could always pass things out from there.
Yeah, you can forward it on to everyone else.
Got it. Okay, I'll be the point person for that. Okay. I'd be fine with that.
You want me to go on this one? Okay, so objective task, ensure Story County Medical System is optimized to meet potential increased utilization. So a task was maintain situational awareness of MGMC and Story County Medical Center's capacity. So this would be surge capacity. And I know meeting with daily with Mary Greeley, surge capacity is being done by the hospital directors and the emergency coordinator, Chris Perrin. And I think this is being done. We got a surge capacity today for Story County Medical Center.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then maintain situational awareness of ambulance and EMS capacity. And that's being done in our ER, and there is guidance. We did want to say, if you go to the Iowa Department of Public Health webpage, right there, you get guidance specific for businesses, organizations, schools, emergency personnel, daycares. And then maintain situational awareness of critical supplies, personnel, and a process to request additional resources. You would contact Story County Public Health, us, if you needed additional resources. This would be testing kits, PPE. I will tell you there, I read this weekend, there's only 850 tests for all of Iowa. So prioritizing who you're testing is very important. And I know that's an issue on its own. We did today make a call to UHL to try to get extra testing kits, media. So you would come through us, and then we would contact Keith on what we would need. There's a process for that.
Do we currently not have any test kits at this time?
Public health has.
No, I mean here, like at Mary Greeley or McFarland.
No, they do.
They do, yeah. Yes.
You do?
Mm-hmm. They do.
And then where do you have to send that off to?
That goes to the UHL lab. A courier picks it up.
Iowa City?
Yes.
We also have the option of going to LabCorp because they have set up, that takes 4 to 5 days as opposed to the turnaround time to Iowa City. Is it 24 hours? Is that right?
I think it's 24 to 48 hours. It depends. A courier comes every day at 3, between 2 and 3. So.
And it's free.
Getting it there.
And the reference lab, that's new. Just,
right.
Just recently were we able to send them out to a reference lab.
Yep.
Now, if you do use UHL testing kits and you go through that, there is still the provider criteria that we sent out. We have a group that we sent out to providers. And so it's important if you use your own reference lab like LabCorp, then it's at the physician's discretion.
Just some assumptions that today we talked about is we really anticipate this to really have an impact in Story County until June. We know that it's not if, but when we will have a positive test for COVID-19 at some point in time with community spread. We are hearing that there is a lack of disinfectant supplies. And so that may be something in relationship to public health as we acquire different maybe funding options or things for the Iowa Department of Public Health, that then we will determine how to distribute those. Also in relationship to a lack of PPE. And at this point in time, I will tell you, we have not had any requests for any of those types of items. We do know, I just know in relationship to Mary Greeley Medical Center, that some of those types of items, though, are on back order. So we will see how things play out.
What would happen if, like, the clinic called you up, our department in pediatrics, and says, mm-hmm. you know, can we have some gowns? Would we get them?
You need some gowns, that's what you would say?
Yeah. We'd get them?
We would visit with you.
Okay.
and you know, really what we need to do, one of our tasks will be to prioritize. And probably, Dr. Passion, I'd ask you, how are you utilizing your gowns? You know, are you utilizing them appropriately? I mean, those will be some of the questions that we will go through and that we will ask our folks as they're requesting it. Now, right now, today, for public health, we don't have that huge stockpile, but we are thinking that maybe we will be able to request some of those things from the Iowa Department of Public Health. The last thing on there is Story County Board of Health may be required to implement area quarantines. At this point in time, all of our individuals that we've been monitoring have been cooperative and have reported to us what they need to report. If at some point we get somebody that isn't as cooperative, we would come to the Board of Health and help with, I don't want to call it, help us maintain that quarantine. We would go through the Sheriff's Department and those types of things, but we would utilize your leverage in relationship to that.
Let's talk about the mechanics of that.
Sure.
Since you're talking about that right now, I read the information that was sent to me about all that and about how it's a misdemeanor and we have that ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to need that done, you're going to need that done not at our bi-monthly meeting, but you're going to need it
right
at like 5 o'clock on a Friday.
Right.
So do we or any of us or I have the authority to do that as the chairman of the Board of Health? Can I, or do we need to vote on that? Because this is something that it will be very difficult to get us all together when they
right
need this.
Right. I would think as the chairman you'd be able to do that, but I don't know that for a fact. That is something I would have
to.
I don't have the code. I pulled the code or whatever, but I don't.
Yeah, I would have to refer back to the code.
I could not remember anything in the code or Heather, that talked about, it just said Board of Health.
Yeah, which we need to have a public, yeah, public meeting,
or,
but.
Or do we need to, the thing I'm thinking about is, do we need to make a movement?
I think if you just call.
137, yeah.
So I guess I would recommend, this is Heather Bombi with the Iowa Department of Public Health, and I would recommend maybe first thing tomorrow, somebody check with the county attorney to make sure, but I'm not, I don't think that it would hurt anything tonight if you took a formal vote and just gave Dr. Passion the authority to sign that order on behalf of the Board of Health, and then that way you could cover that and then check with the county attorney just to make sure that that's an appropriate way to handle that.
That would be something that could be even like an emergency order, like an emergency stay.
The only thing is I don't think we can do that because it's not on the agenda. I don't know that we can vote to have you do that because we don't have it on the agenda.
Because we didn't know
the actual item isn't there, but the subject as a whole is there. I don't know if that.
I think you have to have discussion and consideration looking at our board chair or the Board of Supervisors chair to do a vote on that, so which would mean we'd probably, before our next board meeting or next one coming up, is to have another meeting. And that was kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to have this, to figure out what are things are we missing that we need to be able to do a quick turnaround.
We need to have that in place somehow. And I carry a beeper with me 24/7. So.
But it says here it's discussion and consideration of any preparations needed related to the COVID-19. Our agenda.
Yeah, but I see what they're saying. So if we can somehow check with the Story County attorney and we should try to get that in place.
I think we could do that by telephone. I don't think we could wait until another meeting.
I think that would be reasonable. Okay. All right.
And then, Lisa, will you let us know?
Yep. I'll follow up. Yeah.
Okay.
See what we can find out.
And do you have ways to contact me besides my cell phone? Do you have my beeper number? Mary Greeley does.
Yeah, I do not.
Okay, before we leave tonight, make sure you get it.
Okay. Thank you.
Keith Morgan.
Oh, okay, you have it.
Yes, go ahead, Keith.
For the record, I might also recommend that you not make it just one person, but have a chain of, if you're not here, she can't get hold of you, the next person's empowered, the next person's empowered, the next person's empowered.
Okay.
Do we need a motion of that?
Can we do that? I don't know. Can we make that motion? The motion we're trying to say is that, well, no, we really, it doesn't sound like we can, not just yet at this time. But Keith's suggestion was that not only that we have one person that they can contact, but that we have a chain of command. Yep. And so we can certainly make that work. I think it would probably be Mark Speck as vice chair, and then Molly, and then John. And Louisa, and then you.
Okay.
Just down the line. Okay. That's a good idea. Okay.
Do you have a question to ask Anthony Anderson?
Can you what?
Can you clarify what question exactly you would like us to ask Ethan Anderson?
Oh, we would like to know whether we can have a single person from the Board of Health make the ruling that someone is required to be in quarantine, according to the, I'm not saying that right, but to try to bring into play the quarantine issue.
Importation.
That we don't have to have a full meeting, that a single person can do it in an emergency, as long as we put out who it will be. Because they'll need to have the authority to say that this is from the Board of Health.
To implement the quarantine.
Yeah, to implement the quarantine, yes. All right.
John, could you state that one more time for me?
What we're trying to do is we're trying to get an opinion from the Story County attorney that a single member of the Board of Health can implement the quarantine order if someone is not being cooperative. And our hope is that we'll have the ability to access any of us, but that if one person can't get access, we're going to have a line of succession.
Okay, understood.
Okay. Because the whole idea is they're going to need someone not like tomorrow. They're going to need someone, you know, like Friday afternoon.
Correct.
Good.
You can look at the assignments that we did today in relationship to our planning, putting the incident commander at the director of Story County Public Health, and the
board. Can you speak to the mic so that she can hear you?
And the Board of Health as a jurisdictional executive. So that would be myself as the incident commander. Our operations section will be headed by Teresa Ferrari. Keith will be helping us with the planning section. Sherry will be helping us with the resource section. And then our PIO, or public information officer, is Steve Sullivan. He is actually also the one for Mary Greeley Medical Center, but he, in our incident command structure, he is who we utilize as well. Support agencies that can help communicate or for resources or different things that we can contact. We have Chris Perrin for Mary Greeley Medical Center. He's the emergency management person there, and he also works with the helpers group, with us, which is a group of community resources. Story County Medical, we have Kelly Kane. The medical coalition is Nicole Jones. She is actually the leader of our 1B coalition. And then at this point, we didn't have anybody from ISU. It may be Erin, and I'm not sure what her last name is, because she happens to be on spring break. So she sent a representative today from their lab. So I'm guessing once Erin gets back, we'll contact her, and that will be our contact for that.
Okay, I'm Teresa Ferrari from Public Health. This is concept of operation phase one. So to develop a joint information system to distribute guidance information. So I've done this with like long-term care. I've gotten all of the long-term cares in Story County and developed an email for, I can send out like if we get different talking points for long-term care or webinar that's coming out, I forward that to them. We've done it with the school nurses in Story County to send in the information that we get out to them so that they have access to that. And then the providers. We have one that goes out to the providers. Those are our three main email contacts that we've produced. And then identify public information officer, which you had said it's Steve Sullivan. And if we were like to get a positive case in the county, we would always contact Polly Carver Kim at IDPH. She's a very good resource for us to if we need to do any press conferencing or anything. And utilize social media to identify any incorrect information. Steve has been really good at that. He's got a question and answer thing on the website, intranet on the website. He's also put stuff out there where he saw some negativity, so he just took it down because, you know, he monitors that very closely, him and his staff that he has. And develop press conference, yeah, that's it. If it came to that, we would be in contact with him along with Polly Carver Kim, making sure that we knew what we should and shouldn't say. Ensure critical facilities and services have adequate disinfection supplies and PPE. Kind of talked a little bit about that, identifying which facilities. So we kind of made a list today at our meeting, what would be the most important ones, like we put hospitals there. What were some of the others? Clinics and, so those, we just kind of put them in, because they would go in order of what we felt was more critical to get them. Develop process to receive information on critical resources. Every Monday, we have to put out what we have, all the different public health put out what they have for PPE. And so we have a thing that we enter that in every Monday. Develop process to receive information on critical resources. Kind of the same type of thing. Develop process to receive and process emergency request resources. So that, help me with that. What was that? Oh, yeah, there's a form to fill out that they would then issue to us, and then we would decide. We might need to contact Keith depending on what they needed and what we had. And then
can you contact, all the schools are shut down in Story County now, so who's your contact person? I mean, the public, the school nurses aren't going to be there.
Right, and we, you know, that's a good question. We haven't, because before it was just all the school nurses I would forward emails to. Now,
I believe Keith Morgan has a contact list of the superintendents. So we could go through him.
Superintendents and also the public information officer for Ames. But it needs to be much more extensive than that. And it needs to be actively monitored, developed, and managed.
So you're saying that, Keith, then, so is that something that needs, do you need to do like a specific like meeting with them to help develop that, or what? Yes, all would that
I look to Steve to start to develop a process to be not just know that we have contact points, but to develop the messaging and how the messaging is developed. He's going to be a part of that messaging, and then how is it distributed out.
So we'll be working
We'll continue to work with Steve Sullivan in relationship to that. And today we talked about what different resources, listing and those kinds of things that are available. So that will be one area that we will be working hard on this week.
But is that something you would have be working with Keith as well? Would he be looped in to help with that so you've got that coordinated? Or is that not your particular role, or
I'm looking to their PIO to develop the joint information system.
Okay.
To
right. No, I understand. I just want to make sure I was clear and understood. So, thank you.
So this one, conduct planning of phase two. So positive, and if we have a positive in Story County, so we would establish a planning group, which we've established, and develop plan to be complete at end of meeting. So I'm not sure, what is this referring to? The planning.
Planning during phase one, be prepared for phase two.
Okay, so like the planning, the when we get together and plan for what we would do in a positive, and if we have a positive in Story County, we would be directed by IDPH in what to do with that.
And this group, the group that we met today, we're going to continue to meet. We're going to meet via Zoom, and it'll be on Tuesdays and Fridays at 2:30. We just feel like there's lots of information coming out. We get a lot of, I got a lot of information over the weekend. So that gives us Monday to kind of take a look at that and visit with folks then on Tuesday. And then again, it seems like a lot happens on Fridays. So again, we'll touch base with this group on Friday and see where everybody is and how we need to proceed with resources or any other things, I guess, that are happening within the county. It'll also be a time for us just to kind of review to what the situation is. How many cases do we have? What type of cases are they? What are the hospitals? How are they handling those types of things? So that will be a lot of what we will discuss at that time. So these guys, I'll let them talk about.
So IDPH notifies public health and EM of infection restricted. So this is when we get a positive in Story County. So again, IDPH, like we feel like a broken record, but they direct us very closely on what we do. We'd put them in quarantine and have them report their symptoms, or if they have symptoms. Like now, if we get someone that's in isolation, then they just report their temperature to us twice a day. And then if they aren't cooperative, then we would require, that's where we would require your guys' help in making them stay. Then there, of course, would be a press release. High-risk location, schools, large budget special meeting at Board of Health. So this would be like if there would be a positive in a school or something, and then we'd just have to decide whether or not that business or school or wherever the positive case, if it needed to be, the whole facility needed to be quarantined, and we would involve you guys in making that decision, the jurisdictional executive. And then provide recommendations on quarantines to location and other large gatherings. So, yeah, it's just, and consider interactions with other high-risk locations. So this is just referring to any businesses and how much we need to close down or quarantine, or if it would be community spread, if we would have to close down the whole Story County and keep people from coming in and out. Those are things. Medical facilities, special meeting of planning group to determine potential impacts to overall medical system. So they're having these meetings, and I've gone to several of them where every day now they're doing it. I went to one this afternoon. They have their groups, the hospital does. They have a staffing group. They have a communication group. They have, and Dr. Fulton's always at these, has been to the last few meetings that I've been at. And so they're working on like whether or not they need to stop on elective surgery or elective surgeries, and what they're going to do with the staffing if they close down the OR, but limit the cases. They're going to have all these, I think they said 65 nurses, and to do with them. I mean, there's just all kinds of and things. And if we do start to get positive patients, where they're going to put them, they've got a plan, you know, put them on a certain floor. And then what we get when we have positive patients that are from a nursing home, they aren't going to want to go back to the nursing home, and then where we can put them and keep them for their 14 days. So they've made plans on that. The big thing is staffing, and then they're working hard on trying to get a lot of jobs too that don't have to be at work, that from teleconference or just from working from home, that kind of thing. So, yeah, they're making a lot of progress. And today they mentioned daycares and the people that not, you know, schools not being open, then daycare issue. And so they've got a team working with that, too, on what to do with that. So, and this is a positive has contact. So if positive has a contact, then we as public health would kind of like what Sherry had said earlier, we would, like with any other disease, we contact the contacts. And they would have to be quarantined too if this person is positive, and then they were in within 6 feet from that person, they would all have to be quarantined, and we would monitor that. And then provide recommend quarantine to location and other large gatherings, consider interactions with other high risk locations. So, I mean, it gets. If we get a lot of that, it'll come to a point where you won't really worry about all the contacts. I mean, that's what IDPH has even told us. You know, if we have like a lot of them, we can't. It's just like everybody stay home if you're sick. That's kind of what would be because you can't continually watch all the contacts. But at this point, if we have a positive, which we haven't yet, then we will make sure that if they had any contacts that we would contact them and then put them in isolation. And special meeting of planning group to determine potential impacts, disinfectant strike team, staffing augmentation. Talked a little bit about that. Like, if we would get really busy, what we would do, because it's just the two of us public health nurses, we do have a couple PRN staff that we could call in, and there's if there's nurses over at the hospital that aren't working because they've been called off or whatever. And there's just different options that we would look at if we would get super busy.
Do you have options to, like, ask, like, recently retired nurses to come back?
They mentioned that. Well, what they mentioned today was taking nurses that, you know how some nurses have gotten out of the clinical setting and they've went to education, or there's a few of the nurses that I can think of that have probably done that in the last couple of years. So they were ICU nurses and worked with me where I used to work. And they would get called back to ICU, that type of thing. They're looking at that. They were kind of looking at that for anyone that's been in clinical settings since 2014.
Gotcha.
Okay. Which would include me, but we're thinking they're not going to take me.
One of the things that we have is there someone here from Story County? Mm-hmm. Very good. Excellent. Is there one of the things that I wondered, has anyone thought about, is the idea that if we do get hit with this bad and we're going to need hospital beds, is there a way that we could allow Story County as a critical access hospital to avoid their no more than 4 days in a row or increase their census as a critical access hospital? Has that been discussed or thought of? Yeah.
We need to figure out a microphone, so since we're recording, so that you could just come up to a microphone. Or do you have an extra one there, Stephanie? Maybe we should just have one at the end of the table there.
So my question was there any discussion about possibly changing the rules for admission and census in our critical access hospital, Story County Medical Center, temporarily if it's needed if we get overloaded with patients?
I'm not sure if
could
we
you introduce yourself, please?
Lonnie Pringnan, Story Medical. I'm not sure if we would be able to do that or not, but I think based on the situation and the severity of what this could potentially go to, I think it's certainly something that we could take to the higher beings to see what could pass through that. But right now I don't know what it would be, but certainly I know that we've been talking to Mary Greeley about the opportunity for beds, what we have available. We have 17 beds right now. I think we have 11 or 12 in our census. So I think that's something that we just need to continue to explore. But I think that's something that I could even take back, and we could start looking at what are the CMS regulations and how would that work for us to be able to maybe do that. I honestly don't know.
That probably would have to come from the federal government, probably.
Yeah.
But I'm sure a call to our senators should make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. Just something to kind of keep in our back pocket.
That's good.
Okay.
What's it take to get the guard to put up a temporary hospital?
A temporary hospital? Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. There's been discussion.
I think Keith might know that.
I can answer that. Is this mic on here?
Yeah.
I don't need to get any closer.
Oh. Okay.
I'll speak loud enough. Any requests like that would come on up through your incident commander, then it would go to me, and you don't request the guard. You have a capability or a task that has to be completed. Then it would go on up to Homeland Security that would interface with IDPH to determine the best way to do that. There might be teams out there that are already specialty teams that are out there that are capable to come in and do that without utilizing the guard. So again, it's critical that we first off try and use the resources that we have to the maximum capability we have, then to secondly be able to, in a very, very good, succinct manner, articulate to Homeland Security and IDPH why the situation is so dire that we need this kind of assistance from outside of the county.
Okay, thank you. That answers that.
Well, I mean, our critical time is when all these students come back from spring break and come onto campus from all over.
Yeah.
That's when it may break, in my opinion, anyway.
Might.
So lastly, just to end here in relationship to, I know Keith does do training for the Board of Health related to quarantine responsibilities and authorities. If that's something that the Board of Health is interested in, I'm sure that Keith would be very willing to provide that training for you. We really talked about the points for the Board of Health notification, so I will wait to hear from Lisa on how that plays out, and then we will want contact information from each of the board members as your tree is developed. A spokesperson for the Board of Health, Dr. Passion, it sounds like you assumed that responsibility this evening. Really, when we think about staffing for our public health department, we are a small department. We do have a lot of folks in Story County. At this point in time, I don't know how our staffing, you know, what's going to happen, what our workload and those types of things are going to be. I do know that I do have other resources that I can tap into, though. Like they talked about, we have PRN staff. I have two PRN nurses in the process of hiring another. Also, since I am over home health, I can utilize that staff as well. And then in addition to that, we have the hospital. So that could be such that we can go back to the hospital as well. You need to think about maybe if there's going to be any extraordinary spending. Again, at this point in time, I don't know. I can't really say one way or the other. We already talked about the meeting schedule. And you guys were asking, I've been talking too much today. You guys were asking for a go-to person. That's going to be us at Mary Greeley Story County Medical or County Public Health. So, questions?
Okay. Well, I think one question that you kind of brought up, Les, and maybe it goes to Keith, one of you, to kind of help respond. So you talked about maybe the board might like a training on quarantining, for example. I would be just the available time, Keith, that you might have if the board so wants that, but would be, are there certain planning things that you would have to do in concert with Les and her staff to be able to provide something like that to the board? I mean, I already know you're getting geared up yourself and stuff, so I don't want to add more to you, but I also want to make sure that we are, or the board is prepared.
Part of the board, I would propose that same training session that we went through 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of the board members have changed, but it steps, we reference all the code sites, and while that's a good start point, it would be for the board to take away and evaluate how they would actually implement those. But we review the code, we review the incident command structure, and then we go into the plans that are currently there. I would probably modify it so that we would review what we've talked about here. But if I can be provided two or three different times, it would be convenient for the board for us to have that training. I can try and work it on in my schedule, but again, two or three times so that I can. And the sooner the better, because if I can lock down that time, then I can fence it all from other activities.
And how long is the, would you say the training is, just so that if that's what the...
It took us probably about 45 minutes worth of actual slides that we go through, and then the questions that it generates, hopefully, probably going to take you to an hour, at least if not an hour and 15 minutes. Give it an hour and a half to be on the same
side. Sure.
So I can speak for myself right now. Fridays right now this week is probably the best day for me. I'm pretty flexible on that day. Otherwise, it's going to be evenings or like this or maybe next Friday. I'm not sure. I'd have to look on my schedule because I don't have an afternoon off anymore.
For the rest of you, is evening probably going to be a better time for you?
Either is okay for me.
Okay. It's fine for me.
And if I think if we look at Fridays, I would want to look at like a Friday afternoon. I'm looking at my board chair. Friday afternoons would work better for me.
Okay.
Okay. Right now we have our meeting between 2 to 3:30. We can schedule it at 4 o'clock.
Can do that.
We can schedule it at 4 o'clock Friday.
Louisa, how's that for you?
Yes, that will work by phone, if that's okay.
Okay, that's fine. 4 p.m. Friday.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Thank you. So and that's at the.
Are we going with 4 o'clock? Or are you going to email us? Or
I put 4 o'clock in right now.
Is it going to be downstairs?
Down there.
It will be in my EOC where I have my AV.
Okay. That's downstairs.
Downstairs in the basement. Mm-hmm. Take a left, and we're the only ones down there.
The EOC.
Emergency Operations Center.
I know. Okay. All right, on the calendar. Okay. Sounds good.
Are there other questions?
The 20th, right?
Yep. Okay.
Other questions for us?
No, it was very good. You gave a very good presentation. Thank you very much.
I guess one question I might have, so for you and for Heather, so are you in, like, daily conversations? Is it more than daily, the twice a week that you're doing, just so I'm just wondering how the information that you're getting from the state level from IDP, how is that coming to you? Is it just through conversations, through emails? I mean, I think the IDPH website's great. I go to it all the time. I've referred people to it. I put it up on Facebook. So
yeah. We get the three of us get, and I know Dr. Passion does too, what we call HON alerts, just health alerts. And those tell us, like we got one today that said Governor Reynolds was going to speak at 4:30,
gotcha.
And it gives us the link for the Facebook. I got one over the weekend that said there was going to be a webinar at 11 o'clock on Sunday, so I knew I could listen to that. So right now we're pretty tight with our phones, but that's how we get all of our communication. And you know what, IDPH is really awesome, and we're able to pick up the phone and call them if we have particular questions. Yeah. And then, like I said, if there is something going on in the county, they call us right away.
And can I ask one question? I mean, I don't know whether Heather can answer this or not. Is there any discussion about, because our hands still seem pretty well tied about who we test. And the only way that other countries have brought this under control is when they've been allowed to test freely and isolate. It's not closing schools. It's testing, testing, testing. And there come a point that we're probably going to want to just be able to test anyone we want to. Is there any discussion about that, about when that might come to be? Is it a supply issue?
My understanding, and Heather can help me, but my understanding at this point is somewhat of a supply issue. The medium that they put the test in.
But what if we limited. Have a private lab that does it?
It's still the medium that the test is put into.
When I was over at the hospital today, the lab person said in the ER they actually sent 6 off that just came in, because it's up to the physician right now. They have freed that. So they had 6 people come into the ER and they ran COVID tests on them and sent them off just because they had runny nose or whatever. I mean, they all sent them home. None of them felt were sick enough to stay in, but they did test them. So I think there is some freedom to that, and they sent them to LabCorp. There's not the freedom to the ID to
right.
state lab.
You know, that's an interesting thing that you bring that up, because what we're reading from the Iowa Department of Public Health is what they're still recommending to us is just to test on the people who meet criteria. I mean, I saw someone this afternoon that, you know, we thought had criteria, but when we actually took a history, they didn't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess I kind of think, I mean, really, I guess we could just go wild and start testing everybody if we want to.
Yeah, I mean, you could, but I think, you know.
But that's not what the IDPH asks us to do.
No, they're not. They're not.
I mean,
but they have freed it up for the physicians to make the decision.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. But that's not the guidance they're giving us. And we're trying to, because what we hear from you
And what we're hearing from the emails is, listen to what IDPH is telling us to do.
Yes, no, right,
so
true.
So we're kind of...
We've had that ingrained in us, listen to IDPH.
Well, you know, and that's what we're getting. We're getting that from webinars. We're getting that, you know, listen to your IDPH. I talked to the University of Iowa. That's what Chuck Gross said, pediatric infectious disease. He said, listen to your IDPH.
Right.
So I'm listening. And, you know, so, but I wonder if there'll be a point. Shouldn't we listen anymore?
Yeah.
And just start testing?
I think one of the things that we're hearing a lot about is testing. I think there's been some confusion in relationship to, we've heard, I don't know if you guys have heard about the drive-by testing, and that should be readily available. And at this point in time in the state of Iowa, it's not readily available, maybe like our higher officials have indicated. So we did hear, I heard Governor Reynolds say today that she thought there would be two maybe coming into play soon, but we're really kind of sitting tight on that, and we're going to get our guidance from the Iowa Department of Public Health in relationship to how, that's where we would see probably some of our resource being used is through those drive-by testing stations. So
okay.
So I have a question. So the ones that you sent in the test for today, they had symptoms of this coronavirus, I understand.
Well, they were people that went into the ER over the weekend, and they had symptoms like, I don't know, I don't think any of them are really bad symptoms, just your cold-like symptoms, which doesn't mean they're coronavirus or COVID-19. But they did go ahead and test them and then just sent them home.
So that was six of them?
Six of them. That's And they sent them to the lab core, and that takes a little longer to get the result.
Fortified. So will we know if that, those six come back?
Well, we will eventually be. We will. Well, we will be notified if they're positive. We'll assume they're negative if we don't hear anything, because IDPH would eventually, it would go to IDPH and they would let us know.
So will we know?
I just saw on my phone that there's a person that just tested positive in Urbandale at this one of the schools just now. Just so I think it would get out there in the media away.
If it's in Story County, I'll know, and then you'll know.
Yeah, okay. And then it will be out there quickly. I did have a question for you guys, though. You know, she had asked the question of whether you wanted to be notified if we get a positive, which you said you did. But then we also have the people that we monitor. Do you want to be notified every time we have a person we're monitoring?
You know, I
mean, we haven't been doing that, so we want to know what your opinion is.
I think what I feel we should know about is anyone who's positive and how many people you are monitoring should be part of your bi-monthly report to us. Like, you've monitored 24 people this last month, because we're only going to take action on the positives,
right?
Not the one you're monitoring.
Right. Okay.
Heather, did you have anything to add about the testing?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I think it's an ongoing question, and I'll just, you know, kind of piggyback off of what you said. The staff at the department has really been trying to do their best to keep up with everything and go with national guidance as well, and have been doing their best to notify our local public health partners almost immediately. I mean, having a 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, I noticed that there's a webinar at 11 o'clock on Saturday or on Sunday morning. I think they've been doing their best. But to answer your question, it's an ongoing discussion, and I know that they know that it's a concern, and they're hearing that loud and clear, and they're trying to get it. And I think it does relate back to just resources and kind of opening that up.
Okay.
Can I go back to your monitoring question? So those would be individuals who have been tested, but they aren't, or are they the ones that are under quarantine? Can you just...
They might be waiting for the results of their tests to come back.
Under quarantine. Yeah, they don't even have to be tested. They haven't even necessarily been tested. They're just in the high-risk group. they've either traveled somewhere or they've been around someone that's positive, they don't always test those people.
Right, so they might just be in their self-quarantine for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost thinking you probably would want to know that because that might be something where you potentially are going to have to enforce.
Well, we would definitely notify it came down to whether we needed to enforce or not. We haven't needed to enforce.
More knowledge is fine, and I think that's perfectly fine, but I'll be quite honest with you. There's already going to be 256 people at ISU that will be self-isolating, and I think it's going to continue to climb. And, you know,
so
and
if you want me to us to send you
I'll defer to the chair.
So I'm
just if we get someone positive.
But you can always call me.
As I understand it, though, these students that are coming back, they're not testing them. They're just quarantining them at the Shelter Village.
Right, because they have no symptoms. From what I understand, you should only test someone if they have symptoms. Otherwise, they would be negative. Is this correct? Yes.
Okay. Right. So, yeah,
Was just on the news a couple that had no symptoms and were positive. They never had a single symptom.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's always the exception to the rule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they take their temperature twice a day, and they have to report that. And Iowa Department of Public or the Public Health checks in on them, make sure they're doing okay.
Monitor anybody with symptoms.
No, we haven't.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's safe to say that we haven't monitored anybody isolation that symptoms.
Yeah.
With symptoms.
You don't.
Everyone, I thought
you did.
Everyone has felt fine.
Okay. Good.
John,
yes.
I do have a question about this monitoring. I have a sister who's a nurse in Seattle. She has come across people, young people, that are normally healthy. Their temperature never went to 102, but hovered around 100. And they eventually, after 2 weeks, tested positive, and in the meanwhile, this person was spreading the COVID-19 virus. What is done in this case when a healthy person seems to have symptoms, but their temperature just hovers around 100, and they don't feel well? What will be done in those cases?
Well, when we get a person's temperature and, like, say it's been running 97, 98, and all of a sudden it even bumps up to 99, that is a concern. I mean, I remember IDPH telling me that if it starts to increase, it doesn't have to get up to 100.4. Just if you see it increasing somewhat, that is a concern that maybe they should get checked out.
And also if they're feeling bad.
Right.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that would make sense. You know, you bring up a very interesting point. The reports we're getting, especially in children, that fever is not always a part of this. And on my last webinar I did on the CDC, they really did talk about the symptoms are very, sometimes pretty subtle. They can be really subtle in kids. And if this coronavirus acts like every other virus that we've seen in the history of the world, the kids may not get sick, but they will be the vectors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that's why we're already taking measures in our clinic, in our department, and we're biting at the bit to just start testing everybody.
We really are.
Oh my gosh, are we?
Yeah.
But anyways, okay. It's a good question though.
Okay. I don't have any other questions. I guess I have a kind of a question for the board. Kind of that what's next. Do you wait till the next board meeting or do you potentially have another one between now and the next board meeting? You know, are there other things on the agenda? Do we wait till after the training with Keith on Friday to determine if there's additional items that should be on the next agenda?
The next agenda for our board meeting.
For a Board of Health meeting.
In April.
Right.
March, April, yeah, that one.
Right.
So are you talking, should we have another meeting before that? That's a good question because we always have things to talk about, you know, in a regular Board of Health meeting. What's your thoughts? The thing that we're going to be in contact with each other about, at the very least, is this quarantine order thing. And we will be making contact with each other and deciding how best to go with that. And that may need a meeting just for a formality of that. And our hopefully it sounds like we should be able to get some type of guidance pretty soon with what we can and can't do. And then if we're going to meet with Keith on 4 p.m. on Friday, maybe that would be the better time to powwow after that and see if we need to set up another meeting and make the agenda then.
Okay.
Yes. That sounds like a good point.
Yes.
Okay.
So where will this quarantine be? Is it going to be a self-quarantine?
Yeah, that's what they're talking about. Usually it's self-quarantine in the home. And they have different levels of quarantine,
right,
you know, that you can do.
Yeah, that was part of the materials I think you sent out or yeah. Heather sent out was the quarantine. I can't remember. I thought I grabbed it with me, but I grabbed two agendas.
It's on the website.
Yeah. Yep. I printed it off, but I grabbed two agendas. So.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. So, all right. So I think I'm going to call this meeting. Okay. But
I get a lot of questions for Story County compared to Polk County. And Polk County gets reported on the news all the time and confuses what's going on in Story County. Like, are restaurants closed or bars closed? Gatherings of 250 people or 50 people? Is there some way we can get out what is going on in Story County compared to Polk County? You know, are all our nursing homes on lockdown? Can you go visit a relative?
No, you cannot, and yes, they are on lockdown.
Well, that answers that. I think what Dr. Kluge is asking for is some type of resource we can send people to, so we know what they know what's happening in the neighborhood. Because otherwise, we're getting it from social media, and let me tell you, we've had issues with that, as you guys probably are well aware of.
There have
been some stern lectures.
I have the same question.
Yeah.
John.
Okay.
I have in my email. Question,
yep.
John Kluge asked,
yep.
Where do people find the information? What is a good website to go to?
And I think local.
Our Mary Greeley Medical Center has, that's where you can do the questions, ask the questions, and they'll get a response. Right there on the front, it does talk about Story County Public Health. But also, really, what we refer people to is the Iowa Department of Public Health and the CDC website. And both of those links are right at the very top of the Mary Greeley website.
So what's the 211 number for?
211 can be used for anybody that has questions related to COVID-19.
So they could use that as well?
They sure can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we need something locally. What are the restrictions?
So do we have something? Do we have something that we can refer people to locally?
You know,
because that's what he's asking.
Yeah. And I don't know that we do at this point. I did just read something right before I came that listed the things that Teams was closing or wasn't going to have open, like computers and different things like
that. We're not getting stuff on the mic.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that reminder. We probably need someone to go to the mic to, sorry.
Or speak very loudly.
Yeah. You know, that might sell newspapers if we get a column in the paper on it once or twice a week.
Oh, now that's an interesting thought.
Now, what was that?
A column in the newspaper once or twice a week is what are the regulations in Ames or Story County?
What's new? What's changing?
What's new?
What's changing? Mm-hmm.
I can definitely talk to our PIO about that. I know he has put different things out with or had contact with the Ames Tribune, but I will definitely take that idea back to him. At this point in time, I'm not aware of one resource that would tell you everything that's going on in Story County. I think there's pieces and there's lots of different groups that are meeting, and so there is lots going on. I have to think about that and how we can put all those resources together. I just recently, right before I came, I was reading something about what the different cities are doing, and Ames was listed, and it listed different things that they are closing and what they're doing in relationship to that. But, and I honestly, I guess I'm focused on Story County. I haven't seen so much of what's going on in Polk County. I know they have one transmission, community transmission, and I know that their school system closed for 17 days. But beyond that, I'm not sure. But thank you, and I will definitely look into that and see what we can do.
Well, yeah, and I just know if someone asks me a question, I'm just putting out, you know, saying your website, but I'm definitely doing the IDPH. I've just really promoted that.
Yeah.
It's a great resource of information.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the City of Ames website. I know we've been in contact with the City of Ames, and Teresa has been to meetings with them, but yeah, I'm not sure what their website says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they are social media. They're all trying to filter things together, but
I know on our county website, we have the link to IDPH mm-hmm. and the CDC mm-hmm. as well.
So,
all right.
So I just have a question. I just was,
can you go? Yeah, go to the mic.
Who decides, like, who's going to close the restaurants and stuff? Is that
who decides whether we're going to close the restaurants? Does Board of Health have any? They don't have anything to do with that.
Well, in Chicago, it was the governor, I think, who did it.
Okay. Because I didn't know if it went from county to county. If you decide that, okay, Story County's gotten bad, Board of Health says we need to close these restaurants. Or, because, I mean, counties can be different from one county to another. So I didn't, yeah, I just.
I think it's county by county. But.
Okay, here comes Keith. He's coming up.
Okay.
He has the answers.
Well, I'm not sure that I have an answer, but this is part, and when we review the code, you'll see that there is powers that are given to the Board of Health when it comes to quarantines, area quarantines, and being able to specifically highlight areas that you can put a quarantine out from. But I am not, this is where you will have to start researching and getting with your legal advisor on what you can do and how you would do that. And that's, I think, going to be one of the after action items after Friday. There are powers that are given to the governor in Chapter 29C, which is the code section for emergencies and disasters, which can also be utilized to restrict access to alcohol and public gatherings and stuff like that. Again, I can't give you that code right off the top of my head, but I do know that there are capabilities that sit within that code.
I've got it on my list.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Great. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, I just have a quick one from the veterinary community. Some states I know are reaching out to the vets, and if they have extra resources for PPE and things like that, seeing if there's an avenue to get those back to the state. Would that be something that is useful in our county or our state, or is that already being done?
Iowa State University actually reached out to me with some resources that they felt, that med that they felt would be useful. That would definitely be one of the areas that we would look at, again, for PPE, masks, stuff like that, when we reach that. And this is going to be part of the overall process. Again, as we gather up this stuff, the incident commander will then try and look out and through our Med Coalition and other agencies, reach out to as many partners as we can locally. And then when we can't fulfill it locally, that's when we start reaching out up to the state and further on out.
Okay, thank you.
And that's the key of, that's why we have this incident command structure, is to focus so that we don't have this zinging in about five different ways all at once, is that over time, I think people are gonna more and more understand that at least the medical aspects of this current situation is going to be under the main direction of your public health.
Okay. Great. Okay. Anything else? Mark, do you have anything else to say?
I have nothing, no.
Louisa, do you have anything else to say?
No, I don't.
Okay. Lisa Hedden?
I don't.
Anything? Okay. I just want to thank everyone for coming. I know it's the evening. I appreciate all the hard work that everyone's doing. Actually, looks like the training is starting to pay off in a way that we didn't even think it was feasible or that would ever happen. So good job. Keep up the good work and keep us informed. Okay? With no objections, I'd like to call this meeting to order or to adjournment. To adjournment. We'll start all over.
Meeting. So moved.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Meeting's adjourned. Aye.